If I were Caleb Downs or Jeremiah Smith, I might be kicking and screaming, fighting what I'm about to play for you. And I'm about to tell you guys that Kevin Stefanski is going to join us in the studio coming up at 8:30. And I'm about to talk about that new playoff format that we got going for us here in college football. However, here is Tennessee Athletic Director Danny White talking to Donde Plowman. She is the chancellor at the University of Tennessee. Here's UT's Athletic Director Danny White.
I talk about like the Tennessee hat versus the college sports hat. I've been probably wearing the Tennessee hat a lot more recently. Yeah. What's our opportunity to be competitively excellent in this new world? But it's a real issue. I'll say it. We got a camera on us. I don't really care at this point. Collective bargaining is the only issue. It's the only solution.
It's the only way we're going to get there.
Yeah, yeah.
I agree with you.
Ooh, Danny White's joined the Bad Boys Club, Owen. Uh-oh. Because apparently I'm the bad boy. Lima, Danny White saying the quiet part out loud, brother. Talking about collective bargaining as an athletic director. He stepped over the line, Tone.
How so?
I don't know. I'm just saying I always just heard that it was like the thing that they didn't want to talk about was collective bargaining. That's why I said it. You just don't want to go along with me. I don't know what you're reading over there, but I don't have your attention.
No,
damn you.
No,
I'll see you in hell.
No, we talked about this yesterday off air, and you made a case on why certain individuals would not like this at all.
Yeah, Caleb Downs and you know what? I wanted to flesh it out. That's always what you want to do. I thought, okay, collective bargaining amongst everybody. Does that include people who are on the rowing team and people who do archery? Who also play college football. Because I got to tell you, if you are including those athletes, your pie got smaller. Your piece of your pie got smaller. So if you're a member institution or whatever this is, like say it's even like say they just want to go Power Four programs, collective bargaining. If you are an athlete at a Power Four program, it's collective bargaining. All right, we'll separate from mid majors, and you go there and you collective bargain. Well, if I'm adding in everybody, then that means everybody's going to share in this. But that means that the top end, you end up getting capped, and you end up not being able to make as much. Is that not true? If you were Jeremiah Smith or Caleb Downs, I mean, they make very fine salaries right now.
Yeah.
In NIL down there at Ohio State University. I think that would probably, these guys I don't think would be affected by it, but I think the next Caleb Downs and the next Jeremiah Smith, if there is ever another Jeremiah Smith, my God, those guys would probably be affected by it. I would probably fight that kicking and screaming.
Yeah, because you're saying it wouldn't be like in the NBA where there are guys that obviously in this next part of this next CBA are going to be making, you know, upwards of 65, 70 million in a year. Yeah. It's not going to be set up that way in college.
Because I think it's set up, exactly. I think it's set up to take care of everybody. So it can certainly provide some relief because I think what you're doing is you're finding a way to put a cap on NIL and a way to control NIL without antitrust lawyers beating down your door and threatening to take everything you have. That's what they're trying to do. That's why the CSC is coming in or they're trying to form some CSC and talking to Saban about it and the whole thing. They're trying to do a way where, yeah, okay, people are going to get paid. The toothpaste is never going back in the bottle. But is there a way that they can regulate it almost the way that the NCAA did? And I think that collective bargaining is a way that you would regulate it almost like the NCAA did because you could look back and say, hey, this is an impermissible benefit. They have a salary here. But I also think it's another way to control income of what's coming in for some of those players because, hey, whatever the guy on the rowing team is, whatever the Winklevoss twins get on the rowing team, that's on them, man. But when you start to talk about Nico Iamaliava and some of the other guys, we're talking big money here. And that would probably curtail some of that.
But do you think this is sustainable? Because it seems like everybody around college football does not like the current setup. They don't think it's manageable. Even the boosters, you got to imagine the boosters.
Because I think it's exhausting.
You got to imagine the boosters that are donating to the collectives as they have it set up right now. They've done this for a few years now, and what is their appetite to keep doing this forever? Especially when you got players that just decide, I'm not going to play in the bowl game. Like I'm just done. My season's over. Or the guy loses their starting job, but yet you've paid him all this money and to be an influencer for your brand.
You and I know somebody who has a kid who plays college football. They play a unique position, and I'm telling you right now, and you know this, that they will go to the transfer portal every year just because they like to be wined and dined and all that other stuff. and they will consistently cause a problem. And you could say, well, the transfer portal, you could chew him up and spit him out. He will find opportunities, guarantee it. He will find it. And it's annoying. It's really annoying. And I think that what a lot of people are, they're just exhausted by the entire thing. When you have the spring transfer portal, I mean, I was listening to Rich Rodriguez talking to Urban Meyer in his last year at Jacksonville State last year, just before he took the West Virginia job. You know how many new players they had? They had to bring in for Jacksonville State from year to year, from the year before to this last year. They had 60 new players.
That's ridiculous.
60 new players. And he said a lot of those guys came in after the spring. So you're coming to fall camp. Get a month.
You're lost.
You get a month. And then he's sitting there going, hey, man, like, people were surprised we started 0-3 after the year before. Well, you got 60 new guys. You're going to start off 0-3. And Rich Rod ain't the only one talking about that. So I think what people do want, we all want the freedom to choose. And they are all adults. I get that. And I think a lot of people just say that because they want the likes and retweets and hits on their social media. But I think what a lot of people are thinking is that, hey, man, this is becoming exhausting to a lot of levels. You're burning out some coaches. Okay, and I'm not talking about high school. Or I'm not talking about guys who are making $12 million a year. I know you guys don't care if they're burned out. But the guys who are at the bottom of that list, they're getting burned out. The guys who are in the mid-majors who are at the bottom of that list, who are making $35,000 this year, are getting burned out. You are burning out the players. You are burning out the people who are close to them. You got people bopping all over the place. You would like a little bit of uniformity there. People do like, we love money. We love money. We love the opportunity to go make it. We also do like security. And this is a way, for everybody, it's a way to have both. But if I'm talking about the upper echelon 1%, I have not even mentioned a quarterback. I'm just saying Caleb Downs, great safety, going to be in the top 5, top 10 next year. Jeremiah Smith, great wide receiver, will be in the top 5, top 10 in 2 years. These guys are the upper echelons.
Sure, but you're never going to make a system that caters to...
You're never going to make it perfect.
You're never going to make a system that caters to just the elites. Because you have to think about the offensive linemen at the non-major conferences, too. You have to figure out a way to divvy this to make it sustainable. And the CBA, there are some benefits, right, to a CBA.
Yeah.
Making sure, you talk about security, making sure that a contract can actually be honored. Because I think there's been a lot of wiggle room there the last few years. I mean, has every kid truly gotten what they thought they were promised? So, you know, those are the type of kids that are probably going to be searching for more of a hardline contract.
I would agree with you. I think that there's definitely been some improprieties that are there. But I think that it's the easiest way. I'm just looking at it from the guys that we know, the real big players that we know. If you were one of them, I don't think that you may act like you care, but when it comes down to it, I don't think you care about archery, water polo at UCLA, like the Olympic sports. I don't think you care about something like that. The 12-team playoff, where we're just going straight rankings. You had thoughts?
Well, first of all, much needed change. Last year's setup was really silly. Like, never in a million years would you have thought giving lower conferences, what we're talking about in the NFL too, you know, some of the worst conferences, why you're giving those teams a higher seed, that quite frankly, nobody thought. Nobody, who were the ones that were the beneficiaries of that last year? There were some teams that had a home game and a top seed that had no business, and nobody thought was one of the best teams in college football.
True.
Do we not agree?
Yeah, I agree with you.
And that you saw that play out in the actual playoff format. So they've done everything they can to rectify this, given, you know, this new setup where you're not just granting a team because they won their conference. You know, you're not granting them on the same playing
field.
Does
it take away from winning a conference to any degree? Or is it still, hey, you won your conference? I mean, an automatic bid's an automatic bid, but...
Yeah, I mean, you probably are, but I'm okay with that considering there are two conferences that are so far above all the other conferences now. Like, I'm sorry, just winning the ACC, in no way, shape, or form is as much of a big accomplishment as it is winning the Big Ten of the SEC.
I understand that. I think it's more equitable that you would go straight 1 through 12. I think it takes away some of the pageantry, because are they going right by rankings of what they already have? So I don't think you have to have any of the conversations anymore, do you? of letting some teams in, leaving some teams out, the politicking that goes on, the arguments that we have where current athletic directors somehow get on these committees, which is insane for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Like you don't have to worry about something like that. We could see a level where they start to politic some of the voters who were to be able to put them in the top 12, but I want to see how they mix that up. I think it's better, but I also think that Ohio State, you know, it's weird what they prove and what they'll be an example of this first championship, what they'll be an example of over the coming years. Because you're an 8 seed. Are you an 8 seed that you're lucky to be an 8 seed, or you're an 8 seed that, man, we had to dive through a bunch of things? Well, I don't think that that's absolutely clear. They had to go through a gauntlet of good teams. They're all good teams. And they beat the brakes off of all but one because Texas was tough at the end, and they're going to be playing them coming up here again soon.
It's just funny. Boise State got a bye and got the 3 seed.
Yes.
Like, they knew they had to rectify that, and they did with
this
new format.
And they did. But I also
Arizona
want to see,
State, a 4 seed and a bye.
I understand. It's definitely weird. And I agree with them moving around. But I want to know exactly what's going to look like the tougher road in the future. And how that's going to be all played out. Because you're probably going to start to put some SEC teams against SEC teams just because of the national rankings. Hello, radio. I didn't know we were on the air. Hopefully they didn't hear anything.
We're doing a show.
We got Kevin Stefanski. He's going to join us in the studio coming up at 8:30 live. Mitch Trubisky is sitting in Kevin Stefanski's seat right now.
Who?
Mitch who?
Mitch.
That'd
Wait,
be
what
a hell
did I say?
Of a
you said Mitch Trubisky.
Oh! No,
Kev, we got a new quarterback to throw into the competition.
Guys,
here's Mitch Trubisky.
Suit up. Never played a down of organized football in my life.
Guys, Mitch Richmond is sitting right there. Run TMC.
Mitch Spinell is sitting in the seat that Kevin Stefanski will soon be sitting. Mitch, how do I even get into this? You send your laundry out to get done for you?
I have a laundromat near me that has a wash and fold service that I use, yeah.
And they fold. They don't just wash it.
Yes,
ladies
they do.
And gentlemen, Mitch is a young guy just starting out. He's single.
Let's establish his age again.
He's like 35.
He's 28.
27, actually.
27.
You've lived on your own for 2 years now, a year and a half?
Lived on
a little
own.
Under 2 years, yeah.
I imagine you're in a position to, you're still in a position where you would like to save money?
More or less, yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know you were doing so well. Congratulations on all your success. And you send your laundry out? You don't know how to fold your laundry?
I know how to fold laundry, but a few times a month, I'll take my laundry down to a very nice laundromat near about a block away.
Does that matter? Does it matter the cleanliness of the laundromat that I know of?
No,
I imagine everybody thinks it's a clean laundromat.
It's the service, and the service is quality.
Yeah,
and
they do it with a smile.
They do actually do it with a smile. They're very nice to me over there.
Mm.
But I a few times a month, I will send like a basket of laundry down there, and by the end of the day or the next day, I pick it up. And it saves me so much time throughout my week.
How much is it?
Usually for the load that I bring in, it's about $30, at most $40.
$40 a week?
If I bring it in a week. So let's say like $100 to $120 a month.
$120 a month? What's 12 times 12?
$144.
You're talking about
$1,440.
Yeah. You're talking about $1,400 a year you're spending just to get your clothes folded?
And that's still nowhere near
Are
my rent.
Are you high?
So you don't have the coin operated in the building?
We do. It's one very old, very dilapidated washer and dryer combination that works, but it's nowhere near the quality.
Is there just one of each? That's it?
Yes.
You know what you could buy by just by folding your clothes? Your own clothes?
I'm aware of what I could buy, but this is like one of the luxuries that I have in a regular basis throughout my life.
This is a luxury you've decided.
Yes.
You gonna say something here, or am I just gonna question?
You could have brown season tickets.
Yeah.
For the amount of money that you're paying.
Some people would say some people would say the laundry service is worth more right now.
You could afford one of those great experiences from the Keeper Foundation,
that's
which
right.
we will be talking about with Kevin, and you better not say that that's a better experience because I'll dump you and throw you out of here.
Of course.
So you can't tell me.
You could give one of my children the Mitch Spinell Laundry Scholarship Fund.
Yes. $1,400.
I know it sounds bad on paper.
Now,
but the quality of service that I'm getting.
It sounds bad in my ears.
The quality of service that I'm getting is worth the price.
I do have to say, it does seem like a rite of passage at some point in a man's life. You do, Maybe it's for the sake of perspective. You do have to do your own laundry at one point.
Yeah.
Just so that have you never done it? You didn't do it in college?
No, I did it in college, and I wasn't doing the laundry service from day one. This is something that I kind of discovered. I actually was doing my own laundry at the laundromat before I realized, hey, they have this service here.
Are we paying Mitch so much that he can afford to be able to do this?
He must be making a ton.
No, I got some side hustles that
side hustles.
Yeah. Are you laundry selling money? Drugs?
Am I selling drugs?
Are you selling a lot of his friends their ski trips?
You do look like you're a member of some sort of drug selling mafia right now.
Well, yeah, with his windbreaker that he has on
that he
definitely wore today just so he gets our attention coaches, so we could talk about it.
This is actually in the back of my closet. I forgot about it until today.
Oh, so you just decided to wear it today because you knew that we would say something? No, why did you wear it?
Speak of the devil. Here we go.
Oh, now he just walked away.
Wow.
Saved by Kevin Stefanski.
That's a way to get out of the conversation.
Saved by the coach. Hello, coach. Good to see you.
So let's do this, Ken. Let's take a small break here.
Peter's here.
We're taking a small break.
We'll take a small break, guys.
We'll take a small break. All right. Small break.
So you guys can do exchanges.
We ask once and for all, who's going to be the coach of the Cleveland Browns? And whose quarterback will be?
Next on the Fan. Right. In the full throes of the offseason and getting ready for another special event, and to talk about his special event, he joins us live in the Smart Choice Windows and More Studios, as well as the Browns offseason. Brown head coach Kevin Stefanski joins us on the show right now. Coach, thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, great to be with you guys.
You mean that?
Of course I mean that. Yeah, it's okay. Friday morning, up early. I got one cup of coffee in me, looking forward to the second one, so happy to be with you guys.
That's very nice.
So we always wonder how excited anybody gets to come in the studio. Like, the stand-up comedians have said, we're done doing morning radio. They feel like they get nothing out of it anymore. But this is a golden opportunity for you, the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, to come in and talk to the fans that call up either in support or on a Monday after a loss, they want to rip you in. So you're facing the music, and I think they appreciate that.
I've and to our fans, and I think they know this about me, I've been in that chair. I've been a first-time, long-time caller into sports talk radio growing up. That was the soundtrack of my youth, was listening to sports talk radio or grabbing the Philadelphia Daily News every single day. So I'm not too far removed from being that fan as a kid or, you know, as a high school student, college student, whatever it is. I know exactly what that feels like when you're eating up every morsel of information coming out of a team and trying to understand the new players or understanding what's going on in an offseason.
So how was the first installment of the offseason with the rookies, the draft and the rookies coming in for rookie camp?
Yeah, it was awesome. It really was a lot of fun. You know, we did something a little bit different this season or this rookie mini camp where we brought in more players. When I say brought in more players, you have the ability at that rookie mini camp to sign players to get a larger number for practice. So they sign a waiver and they're there to practice. And we're fortunate where you can get some local kids that maybe played in the MAC or whatever it may be. So we had a bigger roster at our rookie minicamp than we've had since I've been here. And this is really something that we used to do a long time ago in the NFL. That rookie minicamp was 70 or so guys. It really had evolved in the last, call it, 10 years, where it's more so a smaller, let's focus on walkthrough. Let's not run a camp, because the concern, which I understand, is these guys have been preparing for the draft. They haven't been preparing to play football. So the concern was that you're going to get guys hurt. Well, what we decided this year was kind of do a modified version of both. And we had a really good amount of players that we could have 7-on-7 for our quarterbacks. But then we also were smart with our draft picks and these guys, and tried to figure out where they were from a football shape world and not strain anybody or put anybody in a bad position. As you can imagine, it's hard for Mason Graham or a defensive tackle to show anything in these type of drills because it's really just in helmets. But we were able to have multiple reps of 7-on-7, particularly for the young quarterbacks. We have a rookie tight end that we wanted to see. So I thought it was fun for us as coaches to put those guys through the paces.
If they're getting ready for the draft and then they're getting ready for football, Will that change at all between how the NFL thinks about how they do the combine and how they do all the pre-draft workouts and stuff? Because it would seem like you take them from football, they get ready to do something else, and then they're going to go back to football. But you're drafting to be football players.
Yeah, I think that job interview portion of this process where you're going to run a 40-yard dash, you know, that's the underwear Olympics there in Indianapolis. I don't remember seeing many 40-yard dashes in a game of football in your, you know, in shorts and a T-shirt. But we've been doing it that way for a while, and it allows you to get at least a baseline of what a player's speed may be. Now, we and most teams put a large emphasis on play speed. You know, that's way more important than time speed. But you do put them through all the processes, the medical piece of that, the interview piece of that. And then when you get into that rookie minicamp, and then we get to the beauty is they're at rookie minicamp, and then they're with us for the next whatever it is, 6 weeks, 2 months, to really indoctrinate them into our program, get them up to speed in our systems. But it is true that these guys are training literally for a 40-yard dash. They're going to speed coaches. They're strengthening their body so that they can do well in a 40-yard dash, which is not exactly playing football.
Kevin Stefanski in studio with us. So we are so fortunate that cameras are allowed in any of this stuff. But at the same time, I always wonder what you think, because I saw a video of Travis Hunter not getting out of a break properly, and now all of a sudden he's a total bust. I saw Mason Graham. Some of his food might have come up.
You tired of answering questions about that?
It wasn't some of his food. It was all of it.
So, I mean, we literally took calls the next day.
About him throwing up.
Yeah, we had a call the next day. Said, well, he can't play football in the NFL. So,
are you saying people overreacted? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah, and sometimes we're guilty of it. So, what could be accomplished at all during that process? Because obviously just watching a rare clip here or there is not indicative of what's actually going on.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's the nature of you know, how it is right now. Clips in this world, you know, kind of go around the world, and people make an assumption based on those. As you can imagine, whether you're talking about Mason or any other player, you need the full picture of these guys. And in particular, we're practicing. You can't overreact to anything. I know it's probably hard to hear that, but anything you see, whether it's good or bad, we can't overreact even as coaches. For rookies in particular, it's such a learning process for them. Guys make mistakes, which we expect them to make mistakes, and that's the beauty of teaching, right? Make the mistake, don't make it the second time. And that's the fun part for us as coaches, as teachers, putting these guys in these scenarios that we know they're not going to be perfect. We know that there's plenty of room for them to grow. And that's truly the fun part, watching these guys. All right, you made that mistake on Tuesday at this practice, giving you the opportunity to correct it, and they do. And that's making progress incrementally, which is not going to show up in a clip, so to speak.
You're obviously never going to write any of these guys off after a practice, a mini camp, a training camp. But is there ever a time where you can look around at your coaches, or you can go upstairs and talk to somebody in the organization and go, whoa, that dude looks special?
You know, it's really funny. It's hard. Again, you do have to check yourself. And I can think of over the years being in some meetings where it'll be the first day of rookie minicamp, and a player's getting compared to a Hall of Famer. And we laugh because we can't help ourselves. But that is, you know, you do want to look at all the positives of these players, and that is the exciting part. And if you have to pump your brakes a little bit, you do. I've been accused of putting guys in Canton after a couple practices. But what you're trying to do with all your players is let's find the redeemable qualities. Let's look for the good. I was having this conversation recently with somebody. When it comes to player evaluation, the easiest thing to do is just poke holes in guys. And you can, he doesn't do this, he doesn't do that. The fun part for me is like, what does this player do well, and how could we use that? And that could be at any position, and it could be any trait. But the guys that don't have holes in their game are very, very, very rare.
All right, I got to ask you about the quarterbacks. I thought Lyman would be the first one, but I'll be the first one.
Yeah, we made it this far. That was amazing.
Yeah, it was a pretty wild run there. Dylan Gabriel, he's third round. Shedeur Sanders, he's fifth round. When do you remove those labels and they're just rookies?
I mean, immediately, right away. I said this before, and I've been around so many players in this game that were late round draft picks or first round picks or weren't drafted. once they walk in the building, you don't carry that with you. Nobody cares. Players don't care. Coaches don't care. I've told the story before. I told our rookies recently, you know, at that rookie mini camp, we had our draft picks, we had our undrafted signed players, and we had our players that were on that, like we were talking about, that weekend waiver, if you will. And we signed a few guys from that tryout portion of the camp. When I was at the Vikings a while back, we signed a guy at the tryout portion of our camp named Adam Thielen. And Adam is still playing at this game. He's still playing at a very high level. So I know it's easy. And if you're a first round pick, you carry that with you all the time. And I get externally, but internally, yeah, don't really care.
One of the kind of funny concerns that I saw people have when you guys took Shador was, oh my God, Deion Sanders is going to be calling Kevin daily. He's going to be conferencing in. It's going to be part of the reality show, his talk show on Tubi. I think he has like five shows
Show on Tubi. Yeah.
I have to catch up.
Yeah. Has any of that happened? Have you felt the shit, you know, the glaze of the Deion Sanders prime time weighing in on a daily basis?
I have not. I don't know Deion well. I don't talk to him. Pat Shermer's on the staff there. I talked to Pat. I know Deion has a great relationship with our organization, which is important. They're doing an amazing job at Colorado. We had a bunch of their front office, quote unquote, personnel people come in this week to meet with our front office and do some exchanging of ideas. So we have a great relationship with their program, but not speaking to Deion on a regular basis, really not speaking to any coaches on a regular basis. I think we're all pretty busy.
Out of your active quarterbacks, someone's got to have a leg up, right? You willing to tell me?
Yeah, I'm not willing to tell you.
That's a way to start the question.
Nice try. Yeah, you know, yeah. We had an event down at the stadium, whatever it was, a week or so ago, a flag football event for young kids, and I got the quarterback question only 30 times or so from the kids. So we have a lot of young journalists in this town that are doing your jobs for you guys.
Did they have a favorite?
No, I think they're. It's more, hey, you got four of them. Who's starting? I said, you know, it's early, guys. Let's get through the offseason before we get there.
Kevin Stefanski joining us on the show. So going to not the draft picks, go to Kenny Pickett. What do you like so much about Kenny Pickett? Because, you know, he's a good story with the Pitt. Then he played for Pittsburgh. So, you know, all the fans are going to be side-eyeing him here.
He's a Jersey guy. yeah, Kenny's really an interesting young player. And I say young. He played 2 years with the Steelers, had 1 year with Philly. They win the Super Bowl. So he's just in year four. We, and as you can imagine, the entire league, you do work on players when they're coming out. Whether you take them or not, you always think back to the conversations you had with them when they were coming out. And Kenny was a player we liked, did a lot of work on him, talked to his coaches, a very athletic player, a guy who's had success, has won football games. There's a lot to like about Kenny, and he's young in his career. We feel like, whether we were talking about the rookies earlier or a guy like Kenny, we feel like he has room to grow. And he works his tail off. He's got the right attitude. When that trade happened, I got a call immediately, speaking of from coaches, from Coach Narduzzi, and he loves him. I mean, absolutely loves him. And I can see what he loves about him. Just a really good kid, works hard at his craft, and again, is very young early into his career.
Do you think what happened over the last few years with Geno Smith and Sam Darnold, do you think that maybe there is more of an open mind on quarterbacks just because things didn't work out in their first stop or even their second stop, that maybe we need to have a deeper pool or let guys kind of marinate over time and maybe they can actually help a football team? We don't have to close the book on them.
Yeah, and I think maybe it's the day and age that we're in where you tend to close that book faster than maybe you should. And I think giving guys an opportunity to grow and see, you know, what is in there, it doesn't happen overnight for some players. Again, quarterback or otherwise, there is a development that can take a year, can take 2 years, whatever it may be. I do think the thing that I realize, and I think I'm sure the listeners realize, is circumstances matter, and the team you're on matters, and the defense you have, and the infrastructure around you matters. So there are times where guys get in really, really tough spots, and then to your point with some of the guys you talked about, where they then land on a team where the infrastructure around them maybe props them up or lets them play at a higher level. So quarterback play, as you can imagine, gets a lot of scrutiny and gets a lot of blame, and certainly can get a lot of the praise as well. But it is such a dependent position on the people that are around you, the system that's around you, the receivers that are around you, the defense that you're playing with. So I think all of that factors in when you're talking about these young players.
It's weird because I've heard of some quarterbacks that go from college to the pros, especially here over the last decade, and it's almost like they went from speaking English to trying to speak French, and it put them behind. Do you think, like, NIL has brought some guys back? They're staying for another year. Do you think that that can help make that transition? Because they're going to keep running their offenses that help them win. You guys are obviously going to keep running your offenses to help you win. But can it help that transition to just being more mature and ready to take on the challenges of being an NFL player?
I think so. Obviously, what we love about the college game is bringing players up to speed, giving them reps. You know, think about you go into play whomever. You go into the shoe to play Ohio State's defense. That's going to give you – you're going to learn something that day. So for young players, any of those reps I think are important. There's been examples of guys that come out with not a lot of starts and succeed. We certainly know the other side of that coin is true. So there's no one true way to do this. There's no one true way, hey, a rookie quarterback should sit for a year, should sit for 2 years, or should play right away. There's examples of all of it. But in the end, with playing that position, how hard it is, every single rep counts. So certainly if you're asking me, would I rather a guy stay in college and get more exposure? Yeah, I would. I think that's invaluable amount of reps to prepare yourself. What is the gauntlet in the NFL?
Did it help with the leadership factor when it comes to playing quarterback, like maybe Dylan Gabriel, where you had to play at three big programs and you had to lead, start, and get guys to go with you in three big programs?
Yeah, it's so interesting. Remember back in the day, if a guy transferred twice, you'd be like, all right, what's wrong with this guy? In fact, Flacco was just telling the story about when he was at the combine. Every question everybody asked was like, okay, why'd you transfer? I mean, that's just like, wanted to know that now. We just assume everybody's transferred. That's kind of the new norm is guys have transferred. So I think you look into why maybe they would have transferred. That's certainly true. But with a guy like Dylan, the reasons for transferring were all sound football reasons. If challenges for him that I think were the right decisions and the right moves. And there's always other reasons, whether a coach is leaving and a coach was at my previous school, he's leaving, so I'm going to go somewhere else. So all of that factored in. But to your point, Ken, when you go somewhere new, you have to get to know your teammates. You got to get to rhythm up with the receivers. You have to be in a new environment and fit in. So all of that, I would say, has certainly prepared a guy like Dylan and any player that's been through a similar experience. I think that prepares you for walking into that locker room for the first time in the NFL.
Head coach Kevin Stefanski, of course, he is the man in charge of the Keepers Foundation. We will talk about that in a fun event coming up here in June very shortly. But Lima?
Yeah, there's a famous clip on the internet for all you young ones, Bobby Knight showing off his game face when he was asked about that from a journalist. And now I got to ask you, are you working on your draft face? Considering everybody was analyzing the faces that you and Andrew Berry and Jimmy Haslam were making per pick. Like, after the fact, they went through and looked at every single pick anytime that the network showed you. Can you believe that this was a big topic of conversation?
Mm-hmm. Can I believe it? Yes. That's the everybody. I mean, anything you can get from that draft is incredible. I mean, I say that as somebody who devoured the draft as a young person. So you're telling me I have resting draft face? Is that what we're talking
apparently
about?
Apparently, you all do. People were good with people. Yeah. Somebody went through the trouble, and I wish I can give them credit, because people were like, oh my God, look at their reaction after they, to be honest here with you, coach. Look at their reaction after they drafted Shedeur Sanders. And then somebody went through the trouble of finding your guys' reaction.
To see your baseline.
What did it look like?
They wanted to see after every single... Well, somebody found out. It's like, well, they look like that after every draft pick.
That's about... Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'll tell you what. The draft itself, I have still not seen the movie, okay? So I apologize for that. But the draft itself is a lot more... static than most people would think. We're sitting in there watching the TV just like everybody else is. So there's not a lot that's going on. Phone calls are kind of coming through every once in a while, but I wish I could tell you that there's all sorts of emotion going through on draft day. There's really not. You're kind of watching the draft unfold. I hope I'm not making it sound boring, but it's a long day of waiting and hurry up and wait. But the idea that there's all sorts of you know, speeches being made in that room are probably not true.
When you get later into the draft and it gets even more chaotic and sometimes there are names there that pop up, have you ever been afforded the opportunity of a thumbs up or thumbs down on a guy later in the draft? Like, you know what? Yeah. We're just gonna flat out ask the coach on this one.
Yeah, it's so funny. A lot of those discussions happen prior. I can't tell you, I've been doing it, whether as a head coach or a coordinator position coach, there's not a ton of do you want this guy conversations on the day of the draft. That's why you spend hours upon hours with each other in those rooms, watching every player and spending time. AB or any GM knows exactly where his coach stands, knows exactly where his coaches stand, knows where his scouts stand. So he takes all of that into account well before the day of the draft. I would tell you, I'd say most teams really know what they're doing, call it 5 days leading up to the draft. And even though when you get into the sixth round, and because we expect X, Y, and Z to be off the board and these guys to be here. So you have that conversation leading up to the draft. You say, okay, both these guys are here. We have them ranked the same. They have the same grade, but they play different positions. Who would you rather? And we do a lot of exercises. I give a lot of credit to AB and our personnel department. We do a lot of polls, for lack of a better term, of like, okay, here's what you'd have. Here are your four options. Who do you like? And we compare that. AB takes all that information from how I feel, or, you know, Cat Hickman or Glenn Cook and a lot of our personnel department. So he kind of gets a feel of where everybody stands on guys, because ultimately you have to have all that information. And then when it's time to make those decisions, you got to really trust that you know what everybody feels, and you got to ultimately believe in what you feel.
What role, if any, did you have in determining the Brown stance on the tush push? Because we've had some reporting come out. Obviously, we know it's going to be legal. It's going to be as is. The league did not vote to overhaul that. And we know there was some reporting that the Browns sided with the Eagles on this.
Yeah, so this is a play that has come up over the years at the combine, where you sit there with the different committees and you talk about the play, or at the owners' meetings. And then recently, as we know, in May, in Minneapolis, they made those decisions. It's a Browns decision, but those are owners' meetings. Ultimately, it's Jimmy and Dee and their decision on how they vote on those things. And I can, and AB can, give them our opinions, and certainly I did. You know, it's an interesting play. I got to give a ton of credit to Coach Sirianni, to Coach Statlin, their offensive line coach, Jalen Hurts, who's a power lifter, an incredible offensive line. They are doing it better than anybody else. I think the piece to me that's maybe the most interesting part is whether you push or not, a quarterback sneak is a very high percentage conversion. The last season, if you didn't push, you had a higher rate of conversion than if you did. So to say that the push aspect of this was what was putting them over the top, I just think they do it better than anybody else. Other teams have tried and haven't done it well. We, over the years, we believe in the quarterback sneak. That play's not going anywhere. I've been around some good ones. I'd say Jacoby's the best ever I've been around in terms of the quarterback sneak. And Jacoby was adamant. He did not want anyone pushing him. Number one, because he wanted the ability, as you take the snap from center, you know, between the center and the guard's A gap, then you get the B gap between the guard and the tackle and C gap. And what Jacoby would want is, I don't want anybody stopping me from picking this ball up and going in the B gap if the B gap's open, or maybe even the C gap's open. I want to be able to get over there. And when you push, you're basically saying, hey, we're pushing right over the center, right in the A gap. So that precluded him from being able to do that. The other piece of this play that we're talking about is, if you take out the ability to push the runner or assist the runner in any way, pull, push, what you take away are those plays that happen oftentimes by the goal line or maybe by a first down, where both sides are pushing the pile, quote unquote. We had a great play at Baltimore a couple years back, hand the ball to Jerome Ford on that last drive, and he's pushing and he's fighting for extra yards. That's what our game is about, fighting for that inch, you know, fighting for those extra yards. And here come his teammates to push him, every single one of them pushing the pile. And that was a great image for our football team. Obviously, we coached off of that and used that as an example of a team that really cares about each other. I would hate to lose that play, a play that I don't think is dangerous. I don't know if there's injury data on that play. I know there is injury data on the tush push, but I would hate the idea in this game of football where they're the defense is trying to stop this side, the offense, from moving the ball an inch or a yard, and it's just the old school scrum element of that. I think that's an exciting play for our fans. I think it's an exciting play for our sport. I think it's at the core of what our sport is, which is a physical endeavor. We're trying to go that way. They're trying to stop us from going that way. The rubber meets the road right there. So that I would really dissuade, or I didn't like the idea that that play would then be out of our game.
Coach, another great event coming up in June, Keepers Foundation, Night by the Lake. Can you tell us about the event coming up?
Yeah, so we'll be really excited on June 12th down at Truss. We'll have our Night Out by the Lake event, which is all proceeds go to the Keepers Foundation, which is the family foundation that my wife, Michelle, and our kids started last year. So this is year two for us. And what we're trying to do, that idea with the Keepers, is we are our brother's keeper. We are our sister's keeper. And we want to look out for the kids in this community that need our help. And that's underprivileged kids. That's disadvantaged youth in the Cleveland community. And that's what we're doing. And that's what we've been able to do and give back to a place that has given us so much. I think that's the big part for my family and myself. We've been treated really, really well here. They're quality people in this town that have looked out for my family, that have looked out for me. You can yell at me on Sundays, and I certainly appreciate that. But I also know around town, people have been so supportive and have welcomed my family here. And now, this is home for us. So with that in mind, we felt like we could give back to this community, and that's what the Keepers is all about. So we've had a flag football event down at the stadium under the lights a couple weeks back. We have Keepers Day on Wednesday down in Berea. We'll have raise some awareness for the foundation on the second OTA that we have coming up. And then this event in June, which is a very unique event that you guys were very fortunate to, or very blessed. Me, you were taking care of me.
We were fortunate. Yes, we loved you being there.
You were fortunate,
yes,
but I was lucky that you guys were able to join us last year at the event. And so it's a unique event where we'll have a bunch of players down there, some unique programming to just have some fun, have some drinks, have some dinner, and raise some money for a good cause.
June 12th is the event. Find more information, I believe, keepersfoundation.org. The flag football event, another success. I know that we were sending cameras down there. Fantastic event that you had there. All right, are we ready to open up this?
Yeah, we got to do this.
So Curtis Danberg, Vice President of the Guardians, he left you he knows where the cameras are, too. See, this is good stuff. We have the mystery reliever jerseys that they're giving out over at the Guardians game. You got a Heron, I got a Gaddis.
We're three Herons deep right now.
You have to tear that. It's tough to tear apart. There you go. Which reliever did you get?
You guys got a drum roll?
Ladies and gentlemen. All right.
So we both got Gaddis.
See, this is the excitement for the people that are going to be going to that game. You're going to be able to get an unveiling just like the coach of the Cleveland Browns did.
Thank you, Curtis. Thank you, Guardians. Go Guards. We got to get down and support our baseball team, guys.
Absolutely. Coach, again, thekeepersfoundation.org. Check it out. Great fundraiser. They got the great raffle going on. Lots of different things. Again, the Night Out by the Lake, June 12th. Thekeepersfoundation.org. Coach, thank you for the time.
Yeah, appreciate you guys.
Head coach Kevin Stefanski in the Smart Choice Windows and More studio.